Hey, I'm Jamie from Stonemaier Games, and I'm here on a kind of a dreary St. Louis day to talk about replayability in games. This has come up a few times recently on this channel. Someone asked me about replayability, and then I filmed a video about replayability in our new game, Expeditions. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second, but I have a full video, I'll link to it below, about replayability in Expeditions specifically. But yeah, the topic's been on my mind. What makes a game replayable? Is it important that a game is replayable? And I came up with a list of 15 different ways that you can make a game more replayable. I'm not advocating adding all 15 of these things, but I think they're decent examples. I'm going to pick my favorite game, non-Stonemaier game, or a game that I really enjoy that exemplifies that category of replayability. And I'll also share a Stonemaier game that has that category of replayability. Before I start, though, I want to say something that's been on my mind ever since I've been thinking about this question, and that is that in my opinion, replayability, as important as it is, I think it is more important to ensure that the first session of any game is a lot of fun and that it goes pretty darn well as it can be. That is, you are making the game accessible, you are onboarding people into the game through whether it's the rulebook, the tutorial, however you get people to play the game for the first time, the user interface. Even for a really heavy game, you can have things that make the game easier to play on that first play, because if that first play isn't good, replayability doesn't matter at all. It's just one session. Many people will only play the game one time. I have plenty of games that come through my shelf of opportunity that I only play one time. Plenty of really good games. And it isn't even necessarily that I have a bad first experience. It's just that I have a lot of games that I want to play. And so making that first experience really special, I think, is more important in many cases than adding a bunch of replayability. And in that same respect, because I had a game pitched to us recently that a lot of the pitch focused on how every game session was going to feel different than the next. But the core game I didn't think was good enough by itself. So I think rather than focusing too much on how replayable a game is, as important as that is, focusing on making the core game as fun and balanced and as intuitive and as memorable as possible, I think is the most important. And sometimes building around replayability can hinder some of those aspects of the core game. So I'll talk about that a little bit more as I go through this list. The second thing I want to mention before I jump in is that I do think replayability is important as a design consideration, especially for games that are designed to be where you play a session of the game and then you put everything back in the box and then you play again. A one-off standard game, like most of the games that we publish. Non-campaign games, basically. But at the same time, I do try to keep in mind the accessibility and how easy it is to get a game to the table, such that elements of replayability don't get in the way of the game getting to the table. So for example, if you have a game where you could add 5% more replayability if every little tile and every little token is placed in a different place on the board at the beginning of the game, or you have tiles and tokens that go on different places, random places on the board at the beginning of the game, opposed to having a printed board or a partially sectioned board where you put two pieces of the board together and maybe they're double-sided. So I think that's something that I try to keep in mind in our games. How much does replayability get in the way of setup and get in the way of the game getting to the table? And for that reason, I think having some static elements can be helpful, not just for setup, but also for the game's experience. I think it's okay for not every element of the game to be replayable. An example of this is in Tapestry. And in Tapestry, the achievements are static. The achievements are there. Are the same in every game, because in Tapestry there are so many other variable elements. There are random cards that you're drawing. There are random combinations of civs and capital cities. There are dice rolls in the game. There are a lot of variable / random elements. And so having a few static elements like the achievements and having the tracks remain the same in every game, I think can be helpful for players in terms of how they're developing a strategy, how they think about order of operations, how they might play the next time, opposed to having everything change every time you play. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox here and get into these games. Some ambassador picks for games that ambassadors picked multiple times when I asked them about games that they think do replayability really, really, really well are Aeon's End, Seven Wonders Duel, Ark Nova, Brass Birmingham, Cartographers, Dominion, Everdell, Five Tribes, Scythe, Wingspan, Nemesis, Patchwork, Quacks of Quedlinburg, Rolling Realms, Dune Imperium, Spirit Island, Terraforming Mars, and Twilight Imperium. Now I'll get to my list in no particular order here. These are just 15 categories ways that I think a game can have great replayability, potentially, that you can have more replayability to your game. The first is a variable map, whether that map is something that you set up at the beginning of the game or something that you unveil as you either you're building the map together with the other players or you are revealing the map as you explore and move around the board. And an example of this, one that where that map setup happens during setup itself, is Clans of Caledonia. I really enjoy Clans of Caledonia. It's a very simple setup. It's four different sections that you randomize, and because they're front and back, and you randomize where they're positioned, and you put them on the, you form the board with them. So I think that is an example of really, really effective, clean setup where it adds to a lot of replayability, because every side has two sides, and it has four different positions that it could be in. But it's only four mats. You only have to put four mats on the table. It's very quick to set up that element of Clans of Caledonia. The example from Stonemaier Games is Expeditions. I'll use Expeditions for this because Expeditions has 20 different location tiles, and they are the same locations every game, but only but they're in a different place on the board every game. So you have the southern locations, which are randomized. You put out the southern tiles at the beginning of the game. They're all face up. Then you have the central tiles. Those tiles are face down. They're also randomized. So you know the position of the central tiles every game, but you don't know what they are or where they are positioned. And then there are the northern tiles that are in the north, and they have stronger benefits, and they are also face down. So you don't know where they are either. They are also randomized. And so with a game like this, with Expeditions, even though the tiles are the same, the locations are the same, the order in which you discover them adds a lot of variability, and the order in which they're positioned adds a lot of replayability and variability. Because in one game, you might have two locations that maybe relate to each other a little bit, and they're right really close to one another. And in another game, you might have those locations be really far apart, and that might change your gameplay in those games. And especially, again, the order of operations. Discovering certain things early in the game or having easier access to certain resources early in the game versus late in the game can create a very different experience from game to game in Expeditions. So that is having a variable map or a variable interface in terms of movement. The next step, I have global setup. So different global setup. And specifically, I wasn't exactly sure how to word this, but I'm referring to defining the abilities for different things in the game and having those abilities impact all players. A modern classic example of this is the Quacks of Quedlinburg, because in the Quacks of Quedlinburg, you are bag building with these little tokens that you're putting in your bag. But the meaning of those tokens, what they do and how you can use them varies each game based on tiles that you put out. So at the beginning of the game, you put out some tiles. You put out a tile for the yellow token in Quacks. I just played it the other day, but I forget the name of it. We usually just call them by their colors. So you put out a tile for the yellow token. That tile is double-sided, and you choose one side of that tile. And usually if you have Quacks, you probably have multiples of those tiles. I think multiples come in the core game. They're more in the expansions. So you choose one definition for the yellow token, and that is the meaning of that yellow token. That is how that yellow token is used throughout the game if you add it to your bag and you draw it. An example of that inspired what we did with Libertalia Winds of Galecrest. In Libertalia Winds of Galecrest, there are seven different types of loot tokens in the game. You can kind of see them here. And at the bottom of the board, at the beginning of the game, you set up seven different tiles down here, loot tiles. And you can actually either use the board. The board is double-sided with the calm and stormy versions of the loot tiles printed on the board. Or you can use the tiles. You can just randomize all the tiles and put them out on the board. And the tiles have the same calm and stormy abilities, but they can be mixed together. You could have some tiles be calm, some tiles be stormy. And they change the definitions. They change the benefits of the loot tiles. So having, and that's for all players. All players are using that for the course of the game. So that is a change in global setup, redefining what different things mean in the game, different tokens, different workers, whatever you want it to be, can add quite a bit of replayability. Next up, we have player. Oh, and also crucially, they aren't completely different. They're related. So like the barrels in the the treasure chest in the game, both sides of the tile are kind of similar, but they are also distinctly different. And that way, treasure chests don't feel completely different whether you're playing on one side or the other. They're still somewhat related, which I think is helpful. Next up, we have player asymmetry. So having different asymmetric powers that are unique to you. I think this is a great form of replayability. It's also a tricky one because you have to make sure it's very balanced, and it's tough to balance asymmetric abilities in a game, even if you do a lot of playtesting and a lot of data analysis. But if you can pull it off, it can be a lot of fun. It can be really fun to play a unique faction and see what another player is doing with their faction and kind of wonder, what would that be like? It makes me want to play a game again through the eyes, through the lens of another player, another faction. And I think the game that always comes to mind when I think about asymmetry in terms of player abilities is Terra Mystica. I think Terra Mystica has a fantastic variety of player abilities where they are different. They have very unique, different elements to them in terms of like the big buildings that you put out in Terra Mystica. Each faction also has unique starting resources, often a unique ongoing ability. But again, it's not so different that I have to completely relearn the game every time I play with a different faction. It's like maybe 80 to 85% the same, and then that 15% has a nice impact on the game. So Terra Mystica. The Stonemaier game example, of course, is Tapestry. Scythe also has some great variability, player asymmetry in the game, but Tapestry is the one where I thought a lot about player asymmetry, where you have your own unique civilization, you have your own unique capital city. The civilization adds more asymmetry than the capital city does, but both still add asymmetry, and that the civilization in particular is completely asymmetric compared to other civilizations. Other examples are Roleplayer. Roleplayer has some really nice asymmetry that you set up at the beginning of the game, and the game Root is known for its extreme asymmetry between different factions in the game. Next up, we have player-controlled variability. Again, another awkwardly worded category here, but an example of this is Planet Unknown. So this is where things that the players are doing during the game impact your decisions. And so in Planet Unknown, the current player, the active player, turns this giant rondel, this I think they're called Lazy Susan, or Industrious Susan, as I heard someone say it, a nicer way of saying that. They turn this giant rondel so that two types of tiles are facing them, and in doing so, they are orienting the other tiles around this rondel towards the five other players at the table. And so something that you do on your turn, you turn the rondel, impacts the choices that I have to choose from on my turn. So this is what I would call player-controlled variability, where things that you are doing under your control, or that I'm doing under my control, impact the variability and the replayability each time we play. Planet Unknown is an example of that. I think Viticulture, our game Viticulture, does this well with worker placement, where if I take a worker space that you wanted or that you were thinking about going to, you have to change your plans a little bit unless you want to use your Grande worker. And so having a kind of a tighter worker placement game can lead to player-controlled variability, where the things that I do on my turn limit and impact the choices that you can make, which can set you down a very different path from game to game. Seven Wonders has player control variability. The cards that you choose to draft before you pass on your hand of cards to the next player to draft a card, that can impact this. Casas of Medkin Ludwig, the pricing of different tiles in Casas of Medkin Ludwig. That's something that players control, not the game. Players control how much they price those tiles. And last, Lords of Waterdeep, another very tight worker placement game. Player control variability comes into Lords of Waterdeep in terms of which cards players are playing against other players and which buildings players are building on the board. As I build new stuff, as you build more stuff, all players have access to those buildings, which impacts the shared replayability there. So that is player-controlled variability. Now I have something like the opposite of this, uncontrolled but shared variability. The example of this is the Guild of Merchant Explorers. So in the Guild of Merchant Explorers, every turn, you are revealing a card, and that card is telling all players to place some tokens on a certain terrain or a certain configuration of terrain on their individual player mats. So this is something the game is controlling. Players aren't controlling which card is revealed. Actually, I didn't put it on this list, but Tiny Towns. Tiny Towns does this as well. I'll add that to my little list here. So Tiny Towns does this as well, where the game... Actually, there are two versions of Tiny Towns that you can play. One in which the game is telling you which type of resource you can place, and one in which a player is telling you that. So it kind of hits both of these categories by having those different modes. The Stonemaier Games example is Rolling Realms. I just moved a bunch of cards over here. So in Rolling Realms, actually, there is a lot of variability that comes from the combination of the realms in Rolling Realms, but what I was thinking of is the dice themselves. You can't control, actually, I do get the dice as a category later, but I'll talk about it a little bit now, but you don't control the dice. The game is controlling the dice, and all players are using the numbers on these dice in the realms that they have available to them, the three realms they have. So that's something outside of player control. And then Tiny Towns, as I mentioned before. Next step in replayability is having a massive card variety, a massive variety of cards in the game that that feel different, where the cards are each designed to feel unique and set players down different paths and combine in different ways. And an example of this is Ark Nova. Ark Nova has a huge variety of different cards that you can gain and play in such a way that you, when you play a game of Ark Nova, when I play a game, I usually only see about 25 to 30% of the deck. And so a huge chunk of the deck I didn't see. Some players might see this as a detriment to the game if you're looking for a certain card. I don't play these games that have a giant variety of cards, I don't play them that way. I'm not looking for a specific card. I'm looking to do the most with the cards that I can find. And having a huge variety of cards where the cards actually feel different, these cards feel each uniquely thematically designed, they each feel different, can make a big difference. I'm looking forward to playing the game Earth. I've heard the game Earth has a ton of cards. The Stillmire Games example is Wingspan. Wingspan has a ton of unique bird cards. With all the expansions, I think we have close to 300 different bird cards in the game at this point. And so having that huge variety of cards can make each game feel very different, depending on which cards come up, which cards you decide to gain, and the order in which you place those cards in your tableau. One other example I have of this, Terraforming Mars and Everdell are also games that have a large variety of cards. I feel like I had some other thought to share here. I keep stressing that the cards actually do feel unique because you could have a large number of cards where the differences are very, very small, and then it's not really going to scratch the itch of replayability in terms of the cards all feeling different. And you could also quantity isn't always necessarily the goal here. A game that I'll mention later, Dune Imperium, and actually Expeditions as well, which I mentioned this in the recent Expeditions video. They have, Expeditions has over 100 cards. Dune Imperium has around 67 cards in the core influence deck. But each card is designed to feel so unique and different. And when you don't actually gain that many cards in Dune Imperium. The game isn't designed around you gaining 20 to 30 cards. It's designed more around you getting around 10 cards. And so having each card make a bigger impact in the game, in a game like that, can actually be better, I think, in some ways than having a deck of 200 cards if each card has a bigger impact. So that's something that I try to keep in mind. Next up, we have card and tile randomness. So having random cards, random tiles. I'm going to add one to this list as I'm talking about it. So the example I have here is Skull King. Skull King, a very recent favorite of mine, is a trick-taking game. So in this game, the cards aren't all that unique. They're just numbered cards, different suits, a few special abilities. But in any game of Skull King, as you're playing over the course of 10 rounds, which escalating from a one-card hand to a 10-card hand, the cards that you get, just having the cards be shuffled up and you get different cards in different hands over the course of the game, that can make the game feel very different from game to game. It can impact your betting in this game in a huge way. When you look at your hand, you're deciding how many tricks you think you can win in that hand. And so in any given game, my 10-card hand in any game of Skull King is going to look very different from game to game. That's going to lead to very different decisions. So just having a randomness of cards, randomness of tiles, like in Between Two Cities, Between Two Castles. These are games that have a bunch of different tiles in the game, and the tiles that you gain early in the game, even a game like Between Two Cities, where a lot of the tiles are very similar. It's a very simple game in that there are only really seven unique types of tiles. But having different having those tiles shuffled up and also drafted in the game adds a lot of replayability, a lot of variability. And I also added at the last minute, I added Patchwork to the list, because in Patchwork, you're putting out a spread of a bunch of different polyomino tiles in a giant circle around the table. And then you are selecting from, at any given time, you can select from the next three tiles in that row. You have a little token that goes around. That token shows you the next three tiles in that giant circle. So just the huge amount of randomness that can come up in terms of during setup of where those different tiles are placed around the table can make each game feel pretty different. Next up, we have Paths to Victory. There are tons of games that I could have used as an example here. I'm going to use the recent example that I played, Outer Rim, Star Wars Outer Rim. It's a sandboxy scoundrel game where you play scoundrels as bounty hunters, where you're flying around the universe and you're going on missions and you're picking up people and delivering them to other places and having something happen when you deliver them, or you have ships that are trying to fly around and capture you. There are tons of different decks of cards that you're gaining and doing different things with those cards, what they tell you to do. Tons of different paths to victory, tons of different ways to get points in Star Wars Outer Rim. So I think a game having a ton of different paths to victory can lead to a lot of replayability in the game, where you want to play again and you want to try a different path, or where asymmetric element of the game or a card that you draw leads you down a very different path than the previous game. Scythe is the example that I have for Stonemaier Games. Scythe has a system set up where you want to be able to try to place 6 stars on a chart of 10 different categories. 2 of them are the same, but I guess it's 9 different, 10 total categories. And a lot of different elements in Scythe are leading you down those different paths, like which combination of player mat and faction mat do you have? What encounter card do you have come up early? What objective card do you have? Are other players being really interactive? What's the player count in this game? The player count can impact the which paths that you consider in a game of Scythe. But yeah, lots of paths to victory, I think, can lead to more replayability. Next up, we have variable shared goals. This is such a clever category. I someday want to incorporate this into a game. Or maybe I have and I've just forgotten about it. This is a game shown in a game like Cartographers. In the game Cartographers, and you can kind of see it on the back of the box here, you have A, B, C, D. So you have different combinations of goals that you're scoring each round. So you have these random goals that are set up next to the A, B, C, D cards that are related to what you're actually drawing on your map, this map that you're creating. And in the first round of the game, you're going to score the A and the D categories. So you'll score those 2 goals. Then in the next round, I believe it's B and C, it might jump around a little bit. But in each round, there's a different pairing. You'll score each goal twice, but in a different pair. And again, the goals themselves are variable. So this is shared by all players. All players have these same goals, but just having these different pairs of goals that matter at different times, even having those exact same goals, but in a different order, would lead to a very different feeling from game to game in Cartographers. Another example of this is Cascadia. And an example that's very similar to how Cartographers does it is Isle of Skye. Very different, very similar a pairing of different goals, random goals, and different pairings that you actually score from round to round. Next up, we have deck building. I just threw deck building as a category because I think deck building just inherently leads to a lot of replayability. I mentioned the Quacks of Quedlinburg earlier. That is a bag building game that definitely fits in this category as well. I use Clank as an example. And I think deck building leads to so much variability because not only are the cards coming up randomly, in most modern deck building games, there's a random row of cards. Even in Dominion, where there isn't a random row, the configuration of cards that comes out is unique. But you have a unique spread of cards. But you also have, once they're in your deck, you have those cards coming up into your hand in a random way. You don't know which cards are going to show up at any given time. So every hand feels like something special that you have, and you're trying to maximize that specific hand. So you have those 2 elements that feel different every single turn based on what you have available to spend and what you have available to gain. Some other examples of deck building that I love, and there are lots of them, I'm going to do another video on that soon, are Shards of Infinity, Dune Imperium, and Orleans, another bag building game. We're on to number 11 here, again, in no particular order. Order of Operations and Engine Building. So giving players different ways to build up an engine and do things in different orders, which you've heard me say a few times in this video, I think can lead to a lot of replayability. Because right off the bat, if you make a binary choice where I'm choosing to go down this path or focus on this one thing early on versus this other thing, and that having that thing impact me over the course of the game can make one game feel very different from the next. The example that I have of this is Sulcan. I think Sulcan does this really well. And Sulcan, very early decisions that you make, depending on which wheels that you're going on, I can show you what the wheels look like here, which wheels you're placing workers on, whether you're going to focus on, can kind of dictate whether you're going to focus on tech tracks, the cult tracks up here, the building tiles down there, the skulls, and you can change those over the course of the game, but making an early decision to focus on upgrading one ability or focusing on getting a certain building can really have a long-term impact on your engine and therefore the feeling of that particular session of Sulcan. The Stonemaier game, I would say, that does this really well, and we have multiple engine building games, but Pendulum, I think, does this really well, where the early decisions you make in Pendulum as to what you're going to, like, which cards you're going to get to upgrade your player mat, where you place workers for that are on the board for a long time versus a short time, building that engine and that order of operations, I think, can have a pretty big impact on making one game of Pendulum feel very different from the next. Next up, sheer variety of options. So this is kind of along the lines of a big deck of cards, but I wanted to specifically mention games where the variety of options is just there for you to look at right from the start. Like you have all of these options to choose from, and they're there for you from turn one. And a great example of this is A Feast for Odin. A Feast for Odin has a massive worker placement board with over 60 different actions to choose from. The board doesn't really even change from game to game. So I think this is a great example of the board in A Feast for Odin doesn't need to have completely different things from game to game. Just by giving you a ton of options gives you the ability to choose a different path from one game to the next. This is one category that's a little odd in replayability because it does mean that you have to make these choices. You have to decide, I want this game to feel different than the next. Whereas most of these other examples are the game or other players dictating that your experience this game is going to be different than the previous time that you played. But in A Feast for Odin, largely it's you deciding, I want to choose to go down this strategy opposed to another one, just because the choices are there. The example in Stonemaier Games' lineup is Charterstone. In Charterstone, you are collectively building a village together with other players, and yet you're competing against those other players, but every player has control over their own charter, which has six different, or can have up to six different buildings in it. And so as you play the game rather quickly, you are building and expanding this board, and there are also some central actions as well. And so by like session maybe five or six, you're going to have a ton of different options, worker placement options on the board itself that you can choose to go to from turn one. That's your choice. And so giving players a ton of different options can lead to players making different strategic choices in any given game of Charterstone or A Feast for Odin. Combos. I think combos, giving players different ways to combine two different things and have a special impact as a result, or multiple different things, I think can lead to a great feeling of replayability and variability. I mentioned a few earlier examples in terms of player asymmetry, pairing two different things. But when I think of combos, I think of Fantasy Realms. And our game, Red Rising, which was inspired by Fantasy Realms. It's kind of a beefier Fantasy Realms. But in Fantasy Realms, you are crafting a hand of cards and trying to make sure those cards combo together with each other to score the most at the end of the game. And it just feels really good to build these combos, to have these cards play off each other. Some cards don't want to be with each other. Other cards do want to be with other specific cards. Having them play off each other can feel really, really good in Fantasy Realms, especially since you start out with a hand of random cards. And so right off the bat, you might have some combos that work from the very beginning, some cards that work together, and then you're kind of building off that as you play. So I think combos, Fantasy Realms, Red Rising, games like this, where cards combine together to do cool things, can lead to a lot of replayability. Next, I have limited control and skill progression. I almost didn't put this on here, but I realized close to the last minute that there are games where you are trying to have control, but you really don't have full control over something, and it's something that you have control over. An example of this is Crokinole, and I'm going to add one to the list as I'm talking here. But in Crokinole, this is a dexterity game, a flicking game, where you're flicking a little wooden token across this big, beautiful, circular wooden board and trying to do certain things with that token. You're trying to touch an opponent's token. You're also trying to get your token to the middle of the board. You can try your best to control that token in Crokinole, but you don't ever really have 100% perfect accuracy in the game. And I'd relate this really to any sport. Any sport that you're playing, you have control, but you don't ever have perfect control. That's why no one hits a home run every time they go to bat in baseball, and in soccer, whenever you have a penalty kick, players do slightly different things every time they take a penalty kick, even though it's the same exact ball in the same place with the goalkeeper largely irrelevant if you can place the ball well enough. And other tabletop examples are in flip ships. Another dexterity example is flip ship, so a cooperative game where you're flicking things. And also a non-cooperative or non-dexterity game is Smitten. Smitten is I think it's the newest Snowbar game, a game of my design, where your skill in determining whether or not you should take a turn at any given time, which is the main choice that you're making in the game, which card you're going to play if you decide to take a turn, there's a lot of progression that can come from that. You do have full control over the card that you pick, but there's this element of skill progression to deciding when to play those cards and when to say, I think it's best if I take a turn right now. But I think Crokinole and other dexterity games and sports are the best example of this. Last, I mentioned dice earlier, but I wanted to make dice its own category. Because dice, I think, can add a lot of replayability and variability to any given game, if it's done well, especially if it's done, with input randomness, where you roll some dice and then make decisions based on those rolls, rather than output randomness, where you make a decision and then roll dice to see if you are successful in that decision. A great game with dice that I love is Sushi Roll. This is a dice rolling slash drafting game where you're rolling some dice, you're putting them on a little mat, and then you're choosing one of those dice, and then you're passing that entire mat with the dice on it to the next player. So I think that it's a wonderful game. The custom dice are beautiful in Sushi Roll. We have a couple games with dice. Tapestry has dice, Rolling Realms has dice, and Euphoria is built around dice, where you have dice as workers, and whenever you retrieve those workers or your workers are bumped, you roll them. And the numbers on those dice have a decent impact on what choices you might make with those dice. And so that random element of dice having an impact on the choices that you make, I think can lead to a lot of replayability. Also wanted to mention My Little Side in this category. My Little Side, the dice aren't a huge part of the game, but they do determine where resources are placed on the map in My Little Side, which can have a pretty big impact on variability and replayability. And last, Space Base. Space Base has a bunch of different cards that can come out in the game that can impact replayability, but it also has dice rolls. So every time I roll the dice, I get a benefit, and all other players get to have a benefits based on their tableaus, based on that dice roll. I think dice are great because each roll of the dice is independent of the previous roll of the dice. The die doesn't remember like a deck of cards does. There's pros and cons to both of those, but because of that random element of dice, it can make a game feel very different from start to finish based on what you're rolling, especially if you're rolling dice every turn of the game. I have another link below about a video about asymmetry, I think, that is relevant to this discussion, and also link to the recent video about replayability in Expeditions. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. Did I miss any categories? Any categories out of these 15? Did I miss anything that you think can lead to great replayability in games? Not necessarily even more replayability, but good replayability. The type of replayability that makes you want to play the game again right after you finish the previous session. And any other thoughts that you have about the games that I mentioned or about the discussion of replayability in general? I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments below. Thanks.